Hello and welcome to your GCSE Psychology Revision Podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most fascinating topics on the entire specification, perception. Now, I know what you might be thinking. It's just about seeing things, right? But trust me, by the end of this episode, you'll realise perception is so much more than that. It sits right at the heart of the nature-nurture debate, it explains why your brain can be tricked by optical illusions, and it's absolutely guaranteed to come up in your exam. So, let's get into it. First things first, let's nail the difference between sensation and perception, because this is a classic one-mark question that students often get wrong. Sensation is the raw data. It's what your sensory organs, your eyes, ears, skin, physically detect. So light waves hitting your retina, that's sensation. But perception is what your brain does with that information. It's the process of interpreting and making sense of those sensory signals to create a meaningful experience of the world. Think of it like this. Sensation is the ingredients, perception is the meal your brain cooks from them. Examiners will credit you for making this distinction clearly, so always define both terms separately. Now, one of the biggest areas in this topic is depth cues, how we judge how far away things are. There are two types you absolutely must know, monocular cues and binocular cues. Monocular cues work with just one eye. There are four key ones. First, height in plane. Objects that appear higher up in your visual field seem further away. Think of a road stretching into the distance. The far end looks higher on the page. Second, relative size. If two objects are the same real-world size, the one that looks smaller on your retina must be further away. Third, occlusion. When one object partially blocks another, the one being blocked is further away. And fourth, linear perspective. Parallel lines, like railway tracks, appear to converge as they get further away. A great mnemonic for these four is HROL, horses race over lines. Height in plane, relative size, occlusion, linear perspective. Binocular cues require both eyes. There are two. Retinal disparity is the slight difference between the image each eye receives. Because your eyes are a few centimetres apart, they see the world from slightly different angles. Your brain uses this difference to calculate depth. The greater the disparity, the closer the object. The second binocular cue is convergence. This refers to how your eye muscles have to work harder, turning your eyes inward when you focus on something close up. Your brain detects this muscular effort and uses it as a depth signal. Remember, binocular, like bicycle. Two wheels, two eyes. Right. Let's move on to the two big theories of perception, and this is where the nature-nurture debate really comes alive. Gibson's direct theory argues that perception is innate, it's nature. Gibson believed that the environment provides us with all the information we need to perceive the world directly, without any mental processing. He called this the optic array, the rich pattern of light that flows into our eyes as we move through the environment. A key concept here is motion parallax. As you move, objects at different distances appear to move at different speeds. Near objects whiz past quickly, far objects move slowly. Gibson argued this gives us direct, unambiguous information about depth and distance. His theory has great ecological validity. It explains how we successfully navigate the real world every day. But it struggles to explain visual illusions, because if perception is direct and accurate, why do illusions fool us? That's where Gregory's constructivist theory comes in. Gregory argued that perception is an active, intelligent process. It's nurture. He believed we use our past experiences, knowledge, and expectations to construct our perception of the world. Essentially, our brain makes an educated guess, a hypothesis, about what's out there, based on incomplete sensory information. This is called top-down processing, because higher-level knowledge influences how we interpret lower-level sensory data. Gregory's theory brilliantly explains visual illusions. They occur when our brain makes the wrong hypothesis, or misinterprets depth cues. But critics argue it doesn't explain how newborns can perceive depth before they've had much experience.
Speaking of visual illusions, let's go through the six you need to know.
These come up in application questions, so you need to be able to name them and explain the psychological mechanism behind each one. The Ponzo illusion shows two identical horizontal lines between converging railway tracks. The top line looks longer, but they're the same. Why? Because our brain misinterprets the converging lines as linear perspective, a depth cue, and assumes the top line must be further away, so it must be bigger in real life. This is misinterpreted depth cues at work. The Muller-Lyer illusion shows two lines of equal length, but one has inward-pointing arrowheads and one has outward-pointing arrowheads. The line with outward arrowheads looks longer. Again, this is misinterpreted depth cues. The arrowheads resemble the corners of buildings, triggering our depth processing systems. Rubin's vase is a figure ground illusion. You can see either a white vase or two black faces in profile. This is an example of ambiguity. The image has two equally valid interpretations, and your perception flips between them. The Necker cube is a wireframe cube that can be seen from two different orientations. Again, ambiguity, two valid 3D interpretations of a 2D image. The Carnesa triangle uses three Pac-Man shapes to create the illusion of a bright white triangle that doesn't actually exist. This is fiction. Your brain fills in the gaps, creating contours that aren't physically there. And finally, the Ames room, a specially constructed room that appears square from a peephole but is actually trapezoidal. People standing in the corners appear dramatically different in size. This demonstrates misinterpreted depth cues and size constancy. Our brain assumes the room is normal, so it distorts the perceived size of the people. Now, let's talk about perceptual set. This is the tendency for our perception to be influenced by expectations, context, and past experience. There are four key factors: culture, motivation, emotion, and expectation. For motivation, you need to know the Gilchrist and Nesberg study from 1952. They deprived participants of food and water for varying lengths of time, then showed them ambiguous images. Participants who had been deprived longer rated food and drink images as brighter and more vivid. This shows that our motivational state, how hungry or thirsty we are, can literally change what we perceive. For expectation, the key study is Bruner and Minton from 1955. They showed participants the number 13, or the letter B, depending on whether they were in a number context or letter context group. When the ambiguous figure was shown, which could be read as either 13 or B, participants perceived it according to their prior context. This shows that what we expect to see shapes what we actually see.
Okay, exam tips time. This is where I want you to really listen carefully. Number one, always use precise terminology. Don't just say depth cues. Say whether they're monocular or binocular and name the specific cue. Examiners reward specificity. Number two, when you're evaluating Gibson or Gregory, you must explicitly link your evaluation to the nature-nurture debate. Don't just say Gibson's theory is supported by research. Say Gibson's theory supports the nature side of the debate, suggesting perception is innate. Number three, for visual illusions, never just describe what you see. You must explain the psychological mechanism, misinterpreted depth cues, ambiguity, fiction, or size constancy. A description without a mechanism will not earn full marks. Number four, when discussing perceptual set, always name a study. Gilchrist and Nesberg for motivation, Bruner and Minton for expectation. Vague answers without evidence will be capped at the lower mark band. Number five, watch out for the classic confusion, sensation versus perception. Candidates who muddle these two terms in their opening definitions often lose easy marks. Quickfire recall quiz. I'll ask five questions, pause the podcast, and try to answer before I give you the answer. Question one, what is the difference between sensation and perception? Sensation is the detection of raw sensory information. Perception is the interpretation of that information to create meaning. Question two, name the four monocular depth cues: height in plane, relative size, occlusion, and linear perspective. Question three, which theory, Gibson's or Gregory's better explains visual illusions and why. Gregory's constructivist theory, because it argues perception involves hypothesis testing and inference. Illusions occur when the brain makes the wrong hypothesis. Question 4. What did Gilchrist and Nesberg find? Food and water-deprived participants perceived food and drink images as brighter, showing motivation affects perception. Question 5. What type of illusion is the Kinesa triangle? Fiction. The brain creates contours that don't physically exist. And that's a wrap on perception. You've covered sensation versus perception, monocular and binocular depth cues, Gibson's direct theory and Gregory's constructivist theory, all 6 visual illusions and the factors affecting perceptual set, with the key studies to back them up. This topic is rich with exam opportunities, so make sure you can apply these concepts to novel scenarios. If you see a question describing someone misidentifying an object in low light, think Gregory, hypothesis testing with incomplete information. If a question describes someone navigating a real environment, think Gibson, direct perception from the optic array. Keep revising, keep testing yourself, and I'll see you in the next episode. You've got this.